We've got more from the New Political Alliance on tonight's agenda. Julie Edge MHK gives her warts and all assessment of government and what needs to change. So what did she do as minister to solve these problems? Ms Edge certainly has some interesting thoughts and ideas for the future, and she joins me now in the studio to tell us all about them.
I think certainly that the policy direction, and obviously, you know, I've always been very focused on fiscal responsibility. And from what I'm seeing and the latest revision of the island plan, and this is what we're focusing on. One of my big concerns, to be honest, when that came about was that education didn't really feature in it. And, clearly, if we haven't got a good education system, good health system, people aren't going to come to the island. So I started talking to Chris and Claire really about things at that point. And we realised then that we were all sort of thinking what was wrong with many, many areas and policy direction, that we were all on the same page, and we all had that opportunity to really speak and focus on what it was that we think's wrong. So that's really how it come about. It was obviously the island plan, the economic strategy, which Claire's done, you know, an awful lot of work on that. And of course, fiscal responsibility. Chris has always been big on the housing, local authorities and that. So we just said, let's just start trying to see what policies the people of the island want. Clearly, the people of the island are not comfortable with the direction of the current Council of Ministers, and we need to focus on what's required and try and make a difference in the next 2.5 years.
One of the comments that I've read, and there were several, some positive, some less so in relation to last week's programme. One of the comments was, well, at least two of these three have been ministers, and what did they do during their time? I mean, you talk about fiscal responsibility, but one of the recent headlines was the extra jobs posts filled, many of which seem to be in the Department of Education. What's your take on that?
Clearly, that was a massive error, that response. I think it was Chief Minister answer, wasn't it? Certainly, I'm not aware of 900 additional posts across education. Budget very, very tight, particularly around resources. Probably the budget's made up of 80% of employees. And certainly the only increase that I was aware of in my time was additional cover supervisors to support, obviously, learning in the classrooms and to support our teachers when we were trying to. And that was all to do with union negotiations and that. So I think it was a recruitment of 16 to 20, 900. I think there's been a mistake somewhere. Clearly, there's been employees come in and out of education, whether that be the ones that went off to DOI for caretaking, cleaning, catering. I think somebody's got their figures and facts wrong.
Right, okay. And of course, as minister, as former minister, but you would have been the minister when these posts would have been created, despite what the popular belief may be, ministers would have had to approve increases in department headcount as significant as hundreds. You would have known about that.
I certainly would, Phil. And I've always, since being coming in MHK, I've always checked what jobs have been advertised on a weekly basis by the government, and alarmed sometimes at some of them that I see. So many people in marketing everywhere across government and that. But of course, we would have seen that. It would have been in departmental meetings if there was a massive increase. And that's why I'm very aware as to what the increase was. And it was cover supervisors. But beyond that, clearly the budget's set out and you know what your resource costs are. And it's easy in education. It's always been a recommended model that it's an 80% resource, 20% operational budget for across our schools and education. So I would have picked that up straight away with my experience on the leadership team at Ballacameen. So I'm not sure where these 900 are. It might be students they're talking about.
So, I mean, this is something that I would imagine listeners would be quite perturbed about. I mean, effectively, you as former minister are saying this couldn't possibly have happened. But the answer that was given was pretty clear, that this is indeed what has happened. So somewhere along the lines, either someone is telling porkies or... The statistics, which you know, government needs to be able to rely on are incorrect.
Certainly, and I think it was actually David Ashford, MHK for Douglas North, that put the original question in. I see he's got follow-up questions asking for these breakdown of people and grades. So it will be interesting to see that. And I think it was only a 1 or 2 year period, so I definitely would have been very aware of that. And certainly, I can't see the evidence of it. I know that our staffing structures were tight, and certainly everybody used to say about recruitment issues. So it's certainly statistics and data is the most important thing going forward. I'm shocked at the changes that have been made to the way we're gathering statistics, the way we're reporting, and what we really need is to get back to the old. And I don't like going back. We should be moving forward with digital processes, but certainly John Webster had a complete nail. You know, he always knew exactly what all the stats were. And why are we not following the same stats now today? We should be, and we should know exactly what's happening. Increasing in employees is really key. It's quite easy to look at because every area, that the biggest issue that I feel has caused the bloat and all these additional posts is the fact that we haven't got a personnel control mechanism in place. I've done motions on that in the past administration. It's key. If you haven't got your staffing structures and the structure required to run the government, you know your numbers, how on earth can you keep a handle on it? I think it was in the current Chief Minister's time, it went and it moved to a budgetary process for employees. And all we've seen is increase. Not against increasing at frontline where we need the services. Services for people are key, but certainly having duplicate boards like we've got with DHSC and Manx Care, it's not working for the people.
Interestingly, one of the comments that Theresa Cope made about a month or so ago on this programme was that part of the problem, part of the reason why it has taken Manx Care so long to get to a position where it's starting to deliver what it's expected to deliver, is it couldn't rely on any of the statistical information it had, or the statistical information was nowhere near robust enough for it to be able to rely on it. This seems like a common theme across government then.
Yeah, certainly. I worked in Old Nobles. I'm very aware of how statistics should be gathered in health and coding of health. And you know, certainly when you want to look at cancer statistics and that, and people, well, how many operations, what's the cost and everything, statistics is key. I blame the calibre of manager. If we haven't been recruiting managers that know how to gather data, or they've got clear direction from their leaders, and it's all down to leadership. And unless we get the leadership right, they know how to gather statistics in line with all the financial regulations and current policy. I don't want to hear it as an excuse, though, because I know the data's sitting there. It's just that they don't know how to gather it. Manx Care's very new. It's only 3 years. I'm sure my medical records will say everything that I've had from birth. And there is a way of doing that. But it's easy to say that we haven't got it. It's too difficult. Let's get a whole new system that's going to cost us multi-millions. Let's look at what we've got, how we can fix it, and make sure we are continuing to gather data. It's a very, very paper bureaucratic process still at the moment.
So during your time as minister, were you absolutely confident that the statistics that were being presented to you were accurate?
I always challenged. Fortunately, having that experience of being on a leadership team in education, I knew if I was getting information back, it wasn't, no, that's not right. Certainly within education, very young, new team in there, following on from Beamans and obviously previous departures. And I felt that I was able to help and support them, particularly around secondary data, because secondary schools data is collected on site in the schools. And, you know, say I got a question back about school meals or free school meals, I knew if that data was correct or not because I had that experience. And I think this is what we're missing, is that experience that you need to be able to challenge politically. Because and you know, many people will say it's operationally shouldn't be involved. I'm sorry, the people of the island want to know that the people that are representing them know, understand how to challenge data and make sure that what's been presented is transparent and open to the public.
So actually, one of the things that you seem to be saying there then is that you need experienced people in departments to be able to understand whether the information that they are providing by way of Tynwald answers, Keyes answers, is accurate. And yet we have perhaps one of the least experienced senior officer group that we've had for many decades, possibly even since ministerial government was introduced.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, that certainly some of the officers that are still there have got that long breadth of experience. I wouldn't accept that we haven't got that data. You know, we don't know where that is. I was able to direct people to say, well, this is where you'll find it. If you go onto the SIMS system in secondary, you'll find it there. I think that's the significant challenge that government's facing as a whole, because there's been such a departure of that corporate knowledge and experience over the last few years that we are suffering, and I think it's wrong, and we need to get back on track and make sure that data is key and that government is reporting accurately for the people of the island to make sure, again, fiscally responsible. How can you say that your budget's this and you're being fiscally responsible if the data's not backing it up? So I think it's really important to have data and facts for that responsibility as a whole.
So moving on then to the House of Keys, we've got you have a starred question. This is in the new system where starred questions, each member gets one starred question, mm-hmm. Which means it's going to get asked near the front of the order paper. And your question is, what actions are planned as a result of the ministerial roadshows, and if the Chief Minister will make a statement? Well, we know, again, from a programme a couple of weeks ago when both the Ministers for Home Affairs and the Minister for Environment, Food and Agriculture explained that the information had been gathered and that the council ministers were going to consider the next steps as a result of that. Are you concerned? Well, I don't know. You tell me, what are your concerns in relation to this question?
I want to see an action plan. There's no point saying you've listened if you haven't come out of that with an implementation plan of what you've listened to. Is it the right thing? I actually went to the Ballacameen roadshow, and certainly the way things are reported afterwards are different to what you might see when you're actually present and what you hear from people. And there's an awful lot of unrest out there, Phil, and I think it's an opportunity for the Chief Minister to come out and say that he has listened and this is what he is going to do, and he's going to make sure that he's got ministers going along with him to make sure that we get the right results for the people of the island. No point going out just looking like you're on the stage and you've listened if you haven't, and without an action plan or a way of implementation. But it was clear from the roadshow that I was at, look, we've got an island plan. This is what we're doing. We've got six strategic objectives. Sadly, not one of them was education, but education was talked about a lot. This is the direction we're going. But to actually grow the island, grow the numbers on the island, we've lived here all our lives. You don't do it through saying we're going to grow it by a certain amount of number. You do it by ensuring you've got excellent education services, excellent health services and good infrastructure and connectivity to the island. People will come if you've got all of those in place. And it's sad that they're not necessarily the top four.
So the ministers did say that they did listen and they are going to take seriously what's been said. Are you doubting the sincerity of the minister?
No, it's not doubting it. I want to see what the action is going to be, because prior to going out, it was very clear this is the path we're on, because this is going to achieve the end result that we've said we're going to achieve by 26, I'm guessing. And certainly from my experience in politics now for 7.5 years, I can now confidently see where certain things don't always come forward quickly, but they're saved up and stalled for elections. That's not what we should be about. We should be moving forward with the right policy direction for the people of the island and doing that as quickly as possible. very limited time now, 2.5 years, limited legislation going through. We seem to be getting more and more private members' bills rather than some of the business that's coming out in private members' bills. In my view, I haven't experienced it, should be coming through departments. Some of it is already happening, and it's just that it appears to be courtesy to allow a private member's bill. However, we're short of drafting time, and I think we need to be focusing on what really matters to the island, its future, and what people really do require on the ground.
And again, you mentioned that you're short of drafting time, but surely to goodness, the whole point of having politicians is to identify a need for law change and to make that happen. Without that primary function for MHKs, actually, their role is largely superfluous. You know, the civil service could crack on and run things if you didn't need to change the law or indeed to change policy. So it's quite concerning to hear that an inhibition to changing law is that there isn't enough resource to draft the new laws.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is some of the areas that have come forward could be policy. They could already be policy areas. There might not be funding sitting behind them, but for instance, I'll use the example of what went through on Tuesday with regards to period poverty, and I'm saying it's been in Scotland since 2021. That's quite new legislation, isn't it? 2021. Believe it's costing Scotland £6 million. Where's that £6 million coming from? But we have looked at that and said, yes, go ahead, do that process. And I think it was actually Chris Thomas, MHK for Douglas Central, that said there's surely policy in place here that could be tweaked and make this more effective in a quicker timescale. Because we know how difficult it can be to get legislation through. So it's not criticism against legislation. It's making sure that you've checked, done your research, made sure there's no policies that could be tweaked, which is a more effective way than actually, and then making sure that the legislation we're changing is the key social policy or economic policy that the island requires.
So then other things that you have on the order paper for questions, you're asking a question of the Minister for Health and Social Care in relation to police early action team. What's that one all about?
Well, that's to see, obviously, it's our young, vulnerable, getting into the justice system too early, and making sure that we've got the right quality of people on those teams that are qualified to deal with young people who have possibly got into that situation and become a young offender, making sure they've got all the backing that they require from qualified, experienced people. And it's not just a group of people that are getting together and doing their best. We need to be making sure that all of these policies and new ideas, as in that group, that we keep an eye on it and make sure it's delivering what it was set out to do.
And then, of course, we have, a leave to introduce in relation to to make provisions about campaigns, donations and expenditure in connection with elections, referenda and other political purposes, about the conduct of referenda and for connected purposes. This is from your Alliance colleague, Chris Thomas. Why would we need these revisions? We have a referenda act, so why would we need any more changes?
I think obviously it's just putting the making sure he's crossing the I's and crossing the T's and dotting the I's to make sure that it couldn't just be a completely very costly event for the island. It's making sure that something is brought in the legislation to secure that. Chris is very, very good with the legislation and the impacts elsewhere. So I'm sure that is the reason why he's bringing it forward at this point in time. Maybe he was psychic and knew there might be a referendum you know, motion amendment coming forward for the assisted dying bill. I don't know, but clearly he knows it's needed, and that is a change in legislation, and that's the type of thing that we should be focusing on and looking at to make sure it's as best it can be to protect the public purse and protect the people.
And of course, one of the reasons that the Manx public elect you, elect MHKs, is because a lot of this stuff is quite complex and nuanced and difficult. And it's not, well, rarely are political questions as simple as yes or no. So perhaps that's part of Chris Thomas's thinking, I don't know. Do you think that a decision on assisted dying is something that the public are going to be well-versed enough to be able to make a meaningful decision on?
I think that would be really important prior to any referendum, that we make sure that there's good public engagement. I don't feel some of the engagement that's taken place at the present time by invites to the Honourable, you know, the mover of the assisted dying bill, being invited to go to a positive action group or to a Liberal Vanner. That's not how the public engagement has happened in other jurisdictions like Scotland and Jersey. It's certainly been a lot more public engagement, and I think that would be really key to any referendum. I know it's, you know, a long, long time since we've done that. I think there might be other things needed to be added to it, because it's very, very clear to me on the ground, working with people in my constituency in Onchan and seeing them most days, people are not happy about an awful lot of things. So, you know, whether there's opportunity to stretch it beyond that, I know that's getting called for now. You know, it could be a new opportunity for complete direction, change of direction prior to the next election. And I think we've got to listen to the people. They're the ones paying for everything. So we need to be making sure that we're listening.
And of course, one of the arguments that's been put to movers of private members' bills is, well, actually, we'd much prefer it if you'd solve the housing crisis or deal with fiscal responsibility or whatever the priority may be. And the response from the movers of the private members' bills is this is a relatively small piece of work requiring very little attention in the overall scheme of things from Keys and Legco. But once you start introducing a referendum, then it becomes much bigger, doesn't it?
It does. And I think, again, that, you know, there's a lot of experienced politicians in the House at the present time, but there's a lot of inexperienced. You know, some people have only had that 2.5 years. And I think it's really important that everybody does understand it, understands the impact and the implications of doing it. And I'm sure the Chief Minister, when he brings his amendment to the assisted dying bill and talks about it, that he'll make that very clear so that people can honestly consider it. You know, that is something that concerns me, that you've got to listen to all views and consider and represent your constituents, not just completely keep focused on one view. Witnesses have been in the chamber over the assisted dying bill. It's been very valuable. And we have to listen to all sides of the argument and make judgments. We should not be going in with preconceived before witnesses even have a say. And certainly that's something that you do notice when you're sitting in the debates. And we're there to listen to all sides of the argument, do the best judgment for our constituents.
That was former Minister and New Keys Rebel Alliance member Julie Edge. Will the Chief Minister live to regret losing so many ministers? Do you find it refreshing to hear the unbridled views of ex-ministers? Or do you just wish they'd all shut up and get on with the job? Perhaps current ministers might try being a little more forthright in defending the government corner and explaining what they're actually about. They don't have to wait until they're sacked before speaking out. Don't forget, this program's available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. I'm Phil Gorn. Go to Mayo. Thanks for listening.